You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Hello and welcome into the 17th iteration of the Coast to Coast Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Austin Craycraft, and I'm joined as always by Dante Guarneri. Are you all dressed in black for today, Dante?
Yeah, it's gonna be a good one today. I cannot wait to see what the Wizards have in store for the Celtics at their funeral.
Yeah, absolutely. We will get into that near the end, but first, we're very happy to have our first guest of the year, Tom Hogan. He's one of Dante's good friends. And how are we doing today, Tom?
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me on. I'm currently a sophomore, to introduce myself a little bit. Sophomore at Penn State from right outside Philadelphia, diehard Philadelphia fan. So I'm excited to talk to you guys today.
Yeah, we're thrilled to have you, and I think it just feels fitting to just start right there. We're going to go into an ultra-deep 76ers deep dive, and we're not going to start in just the Hinkie era. We're going to go all the way back to 2006 when Allen Iverson, one of the greatest 76ers of all time, was dealt to the Denver Nuggets in exchange for Andre Miller and some other pieces, and Tom, I don't know if you remember like where you were at when that happened, because I do, because I'm a Nuggets supporter. So if you just want to talk about how you felt in that moment and just what it meant to Philadelphia.
So kind of giving a background of it. So growing up, I was born in 95, so AI was like all the rage. And so he was huge around the league, but in Philadelphia, he was real special. I mean, he had him and Larry Brown, the head coach at the time, not getting along well, but there's always something about him. He was just always competing, like doing everything he can. I don't know if you guys remember, like when he stole the ball in the inbounds against the Wizards, actually, and finished right at the bucket as time expired. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
He picked it off. I'm trying to remember who was their guard at the time. But there's just moments like that I remember growing up. Like everybody's walking around their AI jerseys. But I remember when he was traded. It was 06, and I believe. Oh, I know where I was. I was down at the Eagle Stadium. The reason I was at the Eagle Stadium was my older sister works there. And I was down there, and I remember her, like, because he was, like, my sports hero. Like, I just know, like, on my phone, I just saw, like, BlackBerry had just come out and stuff. And she was like, just so you know, like, Allen Iverson got traded. And literally as that sentence finished, I remember, like, she got a phone call, and it was my dad. And he was like, make sure Tommy's all right with the whole AI trade. So it was something burned in my memory. Wasn't too happy about it. Obviously, it's hard to hear that your favorite athlete, probably of all time, up there with Brian Dawkins of the Eagles, another Denver trade there, it was hard to see him go, but hard to see him request a trade. But I mean, it was obviously easy to move him. I believe they got Joe Smith in return as well, and two picks and Andre Miller. So two first rounds, one from Denver themselves and one from the Mavericks.
I mean, was it that bad of a move at the time? Wasn't it all right for them to move him, especially given his relationship with the organization, where the team was kind of headed anyway?
So it's interesting you brought it up, because I was looking up some stuff just to kind of like jog my memory of when I was younger. I mean, it was 10 years ago now, over 10 years. Mm-hmm. It was just crazy
to think about.
Yeah. I mean, you have Billy King was the Sixers GM who came in 97, was also fired at the end of the year.
Good.
That was, yeah.
I don't know if we're going to go there. That's a little.
It's a sore subject for me.
Billy King was great when we were winning, but
the craziest thing is like,
never. That's for sure, actually. I found it interesting. It came from the documentary. It actually wasn't AI's documentary. Called Iverson on Showtime. And I just wanted a quick excerpt here from it. He kind of was reflecting back on his NBA career and how he was talking how he moved. Now, Austin, man, I don't know how much you're going to hear this about Denver, but he didn't specifically say anything about Denver. But he said, and I quote, "I wish it never happened, but it was time because it was what I was wanted then. If you're not going to do what needs to be done to help us, I'd rather be gone. I wish I would have just stuck in there and not left. I wish I wouldn't have left." And he kept emphasizing. He broke down in tears. As many people know, AI is very emotional and things. And at the time, I guess what he's referencing is from the president down. You have Snyder, who owned the Flyers too at the same time before he sold them, and sold the Sixers in 2011, I believe, 2012. There was a lot of fallout there, and there was a lot of animosity because it was, you had the one or two man show, you say, in 01 with Allen Iverson, and the two man being Larry Brown, who kept him in order. I mean,
yeah.
He was MVP season. I believe he had the scoring title that season. I'm not sure, or not positive. And then from that, like that's the season he showed up 17 minutes before a game, was having a few drinks at TGI Fridays, which he was known to do. As everyone knows, later in his career, he runs into gambling, alcoholism, and stuff. But like, he was known to go to this thing called City Avenue, right outside the city. It's about 25 minutes from the stadium. And got stuck in traffic, showed up 17 minutes before the game, came out in like their old button-up sweatpants and stuff. I remember like not seeing AI, and I was at the game. I used to have season tickets in a lower level box through my dad's company, which was nice. We always got to go, and he like wasn't showing up, so they announced Aaron McKee starting instead, because Aaron McKee was sixth man of the year that year.
Wow.
And so they, yeah, so, and they had over, yeah, believe it or not, Aaron McKee was sixth man of the year that year, I believe.
Must have been a light year. Jamal Crawford wasn't drafted yet or something.
Yeah, and the craziest thing is you go into when the Sixers make it to the NBA Finals against the Lakers. Now, the Lakers are like what I'd equate to like this year's Patriots. I don't think they were meant to be beaten, really. I think like that they're meant to win. But when AI does 41 points in the first game alone, and you show it's like, okay, we won by, I forget how many points it was very minimal. And it's like, then they shut AI down. He's still scoring 25, 30-some points, and you can't even get it done. It's like, that's when you really realized how important he was to the organization and why the city loved him, I think.
Yeah, I remember as a Denver fan, I don't know if I've ever been so excited for a transaction on any team of mine. Just the way... He was just such an exciting player, and pairing him with Melo, I thought the sky was going to be the limit for that team. It obviously didn't work out super well. I don't think we want to talk about that, but
that's yeah, crazy it was, thing.
Yeah, and like, then
Melo was one of the facts I had here was the 2 or 3 years I believe before that, before they traded him in 06, he was second only to Carmelo Anthony in scoring.
Yeah,
and Denver, I mean, it seemed like they were approaching this. They wanted to go to free agency, like we kind of mentioned earlier, and they wanted to get this big third guy, somebody big down low, and it just never came to fruition, really.
I'm sure it had at least something to do with maybe some league distaste towards AI at that time. Am I wrong easily. In thinking that?
I mean, well, I agree with that statement. I also say I don't think, at least from outside of Denver, I don't know what they're – I never been a Carmelo Anthony fan. I don't know why. Like,
yeah, you can say that to 9 million people in the city I'm in right now. Sure, they'd probably have a same idea. But I think there's probably a number of reasons why maybe Denver didn't get it together. But I guess turning back towards Philly and after maybe a few years after that period, how did we get to this place where you can. We know all the details about a general manager's life, like we did Sam Hinkie, and there's so much being put into this whole "quote unquote" process idea. So, how did we get here?
It was a brutal set of years. So I'm just going to kind of run through some of the drafts after this, after because you have after that same year. God, oh yeah, we also traded you Ivan McFarlane, whoever that is. Never heard of him. So just kind of running through it. In 2007, at the end of 2006, King's out. Ed Stefanski's in at GM. Now, Stefanski was – the Sixers were always running this close organization with Ed Snyder. He did the same thing with the Flyers and was extremely successful where he kept things in-house, like very close to the family, if that makes sense. But this is – Stefanski comes in and they're hoping for some sort of change and all these things. Second year in a row, the Sixers start out 5-12. That's 2007. So AI, you can see why he'd be upset when he's one of the best players in the league at the time, and he's going 5-12 in the beginning of the season. And so there was, again, people don't really talk about it, and at least Philadelphia people do, like radio was always talking about it. I remember them harping on it, was Snyder fired King after Snyder had openly said he supported Billy King's 3-year plan, the Reconstruction plan, because we had felt, not only as a fan base, people were calling for answers, but they felt that as a, like, the executives and things that are making these calls, the team execs and all that, it was time that AI was that important that you need 3 years to rebuild from one player, which sounds almost ludicrous, but when you look at some of these highlights and his stat lines, it makes sense.
No, I would agree with that. That 0-1 team probably had no right being in the finals, but it was really, you know, on the back of this tiny, tiny little man that was just so dominant and so maybe even ahead of his time with the way he played from the point guard position.
Oh, I agree with that.
And he probably carried a team the farthest anyone's been carried since LeBron.
That 09, oh, I 09
last series. Year. Well, yeah, 09 and then... but I think if we're going to move the conversation forward before the Hinkie years, I think the other big time Philadelphia story for the 76ers was once again them trading one of their quote unquote, this guy not nearly as big of a star, but still a star in his own right, Andre Iguodala to the Nuggets. But the thing that I really loved about that trade was the 76ers acquiring Andrew Bynum.
So yeah, that was a 3-way trade with Denver, Philly, and LA. LA got Dwight Howard, you guys got Iggy, and this was
a four-way. Now, didn't Utah was involved? Was it Utah or because they?
It had to be the Magic because otherwise, how the Magic get Howard.
Oh, it was Magic.
Oh, there was another trade after where they had to unload someone. Golden State. No.
Yeah, you're totally right. And wait, what year is that? What year was that trade? God,
it's even 2011.
Yeah.
2012? I'm gun to my head, I say 2012.
Oh, yeah. So this is kind of where I had some pretty heated notes to myself here with just like, again, sorry, just getting back to it, just kind of show you how just for like 2010, the year before, just quickly going over some draft picks. We took Evan Turner second overall after John Wall. Number 5 was DeMarcus Cousins. 10 was Paul George. And number 9 was Gordon Hayward. Hayward, who I think is a much better player than people give him credit for. I would have loved to have him, obviously, compared to an Evan Turner. And then you even look in the second round. You have 33rd pick go to Miami. Was Hassan Whiteside. But it was really Sacramento who traded him away, if you guys remember that. And number 40 is Lance Stephenson to Indiana. So that kind of leads us up to how 2011-2012. Snyder sells the Sixers, so now the Sixers are rebranded completely. Now you have Will Smith, who is one of the faces of the team, which people don't really know outside of it. Like, they know he's a minority holder, but he's very invested into the Sixers, which actually was finally something positive for the fans. And it's been a positive over the past 6 years. I think it's been huge for us. Then you have, again, 2011. You have Ed Stefanski, another GM, gone. And Tony DeLeo takes over. Even though DeLeo had stepped in before in the midst of Maurice Cheeks getting fired as coach. So Tony DeLeo was coach there for a little bit. And we then take Nikola Vucevic. He's on Orlando now.
Vucevic?
Vucevic. Yeah, dude, I can't. I'm sorry about that. I am so bad with pronunciation.
Yeah. And so we trade him to Orlando.
Yeah, and I was saying an interesting note when I was kind of looking through the drafts and some of the trades that happened. Do you know who was taking the last pick of that year?
No. Which year?
Oh, Isaiah Thomas.
Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah. I mean, Sacramento. At that point, now that's just like the de facto answer, right? Because he's the best and only player to ever be relevant when being drafted in the last spot.
Yeah, like that's it. It's insane to me, but. Kind of getting back to your point, like I said, Tony DeLeo takes over in 2011. Iggy gets traded.
One who makes the trade before Hinkie.
Yeah, he makes. Yeah, DeLeo made the trade, and this is we lose it on this because there's classic Andrew Bynum. So Andrew Bynum comes in, he then hurts his knee or hurt his knees have hurt. They didn't catch it in the physicals. He never mentioned it. So then there's a short dispute with. The NBA and all those things, like, we don't want this trade. There's so much money we've sunk into this. How absurd and etc. Well, then you have Bynum, who then, remember, he was coming, he was scheduled to come back, and Bynum goes bowling. You guys remember this story at all?
I can see the picture in my head.
I can't forget it.
And what, I think he says, like, he stepped past the line and, like, slipped and, like, re-hurt one of his knees or something. So he never plays one single tick for the Philadelphia 76ers and makes $16.9 million in a year.
Which at that time is a lot more than the $16 million that Timofey Mozgov is making
a
year.
Yeah, that's about $24 million in today's money.
Yeah, which is absurd. And people were furious. As like you guys know, most big cities are.
Philadelphia in particular, though. They're particularly passionate.
Yeah, and it was wrong, it's so hard to see when you have someone you believe in. It's like, because this too was like, again, like earlier, it's like you have this Eagles go to four NFC championships, like you have the Phillies who go to two back-to-back World Series, win one of them. Flyers go against the Bruins and like have that comeback 3-1. They come back and win the series 4-3, and they go on to they lose. And it's like it's so frustrating to be a Philadelphia fan. But when it comes to the Sixers, it was always you had hope, and then there was these years here where people stopped paying attention. I mean, the views were way down. You don't even have any sort of support from the like you could buy essentially. Courtside seats, even at like the biggest of game, like the biggest, like the most sold out games were LeBron when he was on the Heat. Like the Heat would come to town. People wanted to see the Heat. People didn't care about us. They wanted to see them put on a show over what was what felt like playing a freshman team versus a varsity team. Like it was horrific. And that after that, that's DeLeo gets the boot, and you have the legend, trust the process, Hinkie, step in.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where we kind of bridge off into the discussion that everyone's been talking about the past few years with all the drafts. And before we go on, I do want to apologize. There might be some background music. It's because my buddy over here, I'm in a radio studio. He's blaring some music. So I just want to apologize to all the listeners for that. But yeah, Hinkie gets hired on May 14th, 2013. He later decides on his head coach. He gets his own head coach, and he chooses Brett Brown, coming from the Spurs and the Popovich system. And that same summer, he begins his drafting with Nerlens Noel, which at the time, I think, I don't remember it too clearly, but I believe it was viewed as a pretty decent draft pick. They gave up Drew Holiday in that, correct, Tom?
Yes, so that was... I was just kind of about to mention Drew Holiday. I think that's also somebody when we get to the future, I think they're going to heavily pursue Drew Holiday in the upcoming free agency. But they got rid of him. That was right. And Holiday has that was his first All-Star bid. And he went. That was the whole Bynum situation, so he didn't help. But yeah, that was Hinkie's first draft was Nerland. No, Hinkie's first draft was Michael Carter Williams.
Michael Carter Williams,
who then goes on to be Rookie of the Year, but he's putting up 40 to 45 shots a game. I mean, is that that's probably even higher than what D'Angelo Russell I felt like was putting up sometimes.
He was a black hole. He is a black hole.
And people at the time, though, I don't think people quite realized. People thought he was actually pretty decent, but it was just a classic example of good stats on a bad team.
Exactly, and you're watching, and if you watch the games, and I would tune in here and there, because then it's there was this excitement behind Hinkie. I mean, he was 8 years in Houston. You have him talking in press conferences because Philadelphia media is relentless, and Hinkie didn't mind talking at all. And so when Hinkie would come in, there was this bit of excitement again that came about the city. And I mean, it kind of plateaued a little bit and went down, but I mean, now we're really getting into excitement again.
In Michael Carter Williams' first year, I'm currently on their basketball reference page, and they had 23 players play throughout the season.
Yeah, they were
from all the way up from Evan Turner down to Lorenzo Brown, Adonis Thomas, and Darius Johnson Odom.
Yeah, they had that year. I remember there was 1 week from their D League team. They pulled up six different guys in 1 week.
Wow.
Just to try guys through the rotation. I mean, it was like they're playing a full bench.
Yeah.
Just shows
this is a laundry list of names for sure on this team. But yeah, as you're saying, the next year is when he starts to go full Hinkie, I'd say.
Yeah. definitely. I mean, the way I describe him, the kind of the way he's perceived is by everybody in the NBA, he was the king of getting those second round picks and kind of stacking them up and moving those picks, even though the chances in the NBA of getting a good second round pick are a lot smaller than a first round pick, as you guys know. But I mean, it kind of worked out when in some of these ways it worked out. You have the Michael Carter Williams, then he trades the Michael, we drafted, where's Noel? Oh, we had a second first round pick that year, 13.
Noel was 13, or was Michael Carter Williams 13?
I thought they were both first. I thought we had two first round from Kings trades from before.
No, you had the Drew Holiday trade. You traded. Drew Holiday went to the Pelicans, and that you guys got the number six pick, which was Nerlens.
You're right.
And the pick the next year, I believe, which, because they got two first round picks from the Drew Holiday trade.
The problem I've had with, I guess, the media's treatment of Hinkie, or just the general sentiment around Hinkie, is that he really kind of went on a tear with these draft picks. I mean, for what it's worth, Michael Carter Williams, the black hole that he is, he still did win the Rookie of the Year, and he still was very close, and very, very, not close. I'm not going to, that's a little bit of a hyperbole, but his numbers were pretty high across the board, meaning points, rebounds, and assists. And even the
steal and his value is still being sought after, because this year they still have that Lakers pick, which they traded for him.
But I think if you watch it, he may have scored a ton of points, and it's great. You see those things, and I believe he was like pretty good on the boards for what they asked him to do,
how much they were asking him to do.
But he had a broken jump shot at best. He still does. Maybe it's better now, but it was broken. Like watching it, I was like, intramural coaches would mention something about it. Like, it was just awkward, and he was missing a ton. The thing was, he'd get these ridiculous, like, he'd hit the back of the rim, make his own get his own rebound, and he'd put up a layup. It's like, all right, well, right there, you're just one for two, and then that just kind of adds up throughout a game when he's pulling 40 times. So the percentages weren't there, I don't think.
But even go down the line, you know, I guess now we're kind of full swing in the after effects of the process, but just going through it, you know, you have Embiid, you have Okafor, you have Noel, and for the most part, these guys weren't really bad picks at the time. I guess even Saric, you knew that it was going to take longer. You knew that these guys were maybe injury prone, and you'd have to continue to wait it out. But as a whole, the system that he was running seemed to work.
Definitely worked. I mean, it was. Perplexing when it came to the whole conversation about, well, why do you have Embiid, Noel, and Okafor? Now, because even Nerlens early in this year, like, I'm pretty sure he was furious about it. He was like, they need to get this figured out. He said it in an interview. And it's always been obvious to everyone that it is Embiid, and then it's either Okafor or Nerlens is gone.
Yeah.
In the beginning of the season, I would have told you Nerlens is going to get moved. But I think they've, again, are using this. They're going to, like, push off Simmons coming back, and I think they're going to use this. They kind of tried everything out. Now you have Nerlens playing a ton, and Okafor is kind of burning some space up on the bench. And I think Nerlens plays very well with Embiid, and I think you're going to get a lot more value from Okafor, because I think he's somebody that can do something alone compared to Nerlens, if that makes sense.
I think this is probably a good debate, just because we have seen Nerlens struggle and sit on the bench, and then we've also seen Okafor now sitting on the bench. And I think his value is pretty high at the beginning of the season, but right now I'm starting to question it. He's a bit of a black hole when you get the ball to him on offense. He's not the best rebounder for his size. He struggles on the defensive end. And that's why I still think in the end the way to go might be to trade Nerlens, because then I think Okafor can end up being like your fourth big behind Embiid, Simmons, and Saric.
I think Saric is going to get continuously better, I think.
I love Saric.
Yeah, I'm a big Saric guy. I think I agreed with you, Tom, through the entirety of that point until the end. I'm siding with Austin here. I do think that now, especially that they are just using him as a seat filler on the bench, they're just draining him of his value and his worth. for other teams, because this guy has now gone basically 2 weeks without playing a minute in mostly competitive basketball games. So it just seems like if you're getting an offense only big, you want to see him at least play some offense. And if he's just taking up all the Gatorade, then he's no good for another team.
Yeah, no, and I see what you guys are saying there. It's just when it comes to how I guess those guys treat the media, I think that you obviously, and this is where I think Philadelphia's passion comes into play here when it comes to who you'd rather have on a team, if it's someone similar skill-wise. I, from my perspective, now other people in Philadelphia would strongly disagree, and I'm sure it'd be a heated argument, is you have Nerlens, who seems to be like picking up on things, like he seems to be having more fun out there with Embiid than Okafor did and things like that. Okafor kind of gives off this vibe that he's not happy. And now this is just coming from me, so opinion is that he's just not happy that he's not the one. Like, you remember him at Duke. I mean, is there anyone before him at his size that was so fundamentally sound and smooth? He was absurd.
I feel like the question's always been his commitment, and I think that's you're kind of hitting that on the head, where it just, does he actually even like playing this sport that he's actually really good at but doesn't really put in the 110% that's necessary to be a successful NBA player?
And that brings, I think, what is the Sixers' last two decades full circle. I think that you have Allen Iverson, who set this bar so high that people understand that we may never see another Allen Iverson again. LeBron James says he's the best player pound for best scorer pound for pound ever, and all these things. It's like, so his dedication, commitment through all the injuries that he would play through were absurd. Some of the things that he would play through, and that dedication was not only just appreciated, but it was so obvious. Even when there wasn't a game on, it was so obvious that everybody liked him. And I think Okafor's commitment has really hurt his reputation. I think not just in Philadelphia, I think to other coaches and organizations. I don't see it.
And we kind of we saw Okafor's commitment come into question right off the bat when in early November of 2015, right after he's drafted, after the season starts, he gets this ridiculous speeding ticket on the Benjamin Franklin Bridge going 108 miles per hour in a 45 zone. Close. So I think...
And driving that bridge, it's like one of those bridges where they rearrange the cement cinder blocks in the middle. So some lanes, sometimes it's like three lanes on one side, three on the other. Sometimes it's two and two, and they're tight. It is tight on that bridge. Like, him going that fast is not beyond age. It is just, you're putting other people's lives in, like, at
stake. And then there's the other incident where he was hammered and coming in or out of the club. I remember seeing that and just thinking to myself, one, wow, it must be great to be an NBA player because he didn't get in any trouble for that. But two, does this guy really care?
Yeah, I agree with that because, we played Boston that night, and that was after that game, I believe.
Yeah, the next day.
Whatever it was, it was absurd.
Well, and it was coming the night that they – it was – coming out after the day that they tied the record for the worst start at 0-18 with the 2009-2010 New Jersey Nets. So I guess if you wanted to try and make a devil's advocate argument, you could say that he was caring so much because he was taking his anger out in other ways, but he obviously shouldn't have done that. And that was...
What I thought immediately was, how does this team continually do this? Like, this team just went through the process of having a big that they were on when they got him, but they knew there was total upside. But did he really care? It turns out he likes bowling a little bit more, and so goes the story of Andrew Bynum. I don't know. It seems like they didn't learn from the mistake of Andrew Bynum.
And it's not even that. It's just what that puts in fans' heads. It's you have the Jahlil thing, and people are really excited about Jahlil because he was huge. But then you have, to give you some just kind of come more present, you have Embiid, and it's like everybody's so excited about Embiid, like he's coming back, and then you get that foot setback for another year, and that's heartbreaking. But it's almost it was at the point where it was like, I expect this, you know what I mean?
And just we're trained to expect it at that point.
And then you have, obviously, after the season of LSU not making the tournament, you have Ben Simmons drop out of school and start training. And you have the Sixers with the highest, like, the highest chance to get the first overall pick. So people knew it was where it was. What was it? L.A., Philly, and who was the third one for Simmons?
It was so when Simmons, Ingram, and who was the third pick?
Chris Dunn was five.
Dunn was five.
What are we? Good thing we're on an NBA podcast, right?
Yeah. Right. But whatever. Either way. So then you have Simmons, as the media falsely portrayed, but doubters started believing it again because it was just so frustrating to be a Philadelphia fan. Was you hear the? Did you hear the story? I don't know if you guys remember it when they're talking about Ben Simmons just drops out of school and he's training, and he's training in the gym, like at the individual workouts way before the draft, and he's already got his, like, what they kept calling was posse, and they kept saying, and he had a film crew with him too, and people are talking like, oh man, like this guy's all about flash and all these things. So then I remember listening to some WIP, which is the local radio, sports radio, and there's always the guys that, oh, everybody wants Simmons, he's gonna be a freak, etc. And there's some of the older guys usually that came in, they've seen decades and decades of basketball and sports, and they're like, do we want this flashy guy? Like, but the reality is, you kind of look back and it's like, hey, I was flashy. Like, how can you argue that if it's someone that's supposed to have such unbelievable upside? And then it turns out it was a false report anyway. It was for his documentary, which he was pointing out the hypocrisies in having to go to school for a year. So it had nothing to do with actually being a celebrity. It had to do about kind of pointing out how these guys that are ready for the NBA, and they're just forcing them somewhere that you shouldn't.
And talking about this in the whole, I kind of get reminded about how this team kind of put a bunch of trust into what ended up being a bunch of foot injuries. Because you have the Bynum situation, which doesn't work out. Embiid, he comes in with all these injury problems and feet problems. And now you're looking at him wondering if he'll just be Bynum all over again, because they're both big seven-footers who are very, very talented, and whether that'll work out. And then Simmons comes in this year. I don't think people were worried about him injuring his legs, but it ended up happening. And so I think it's kind of funny that a lot of things happen on the legs for the Sixers.
It really is. And it's like, so the first report you get is, so on my phone, I don't know if you guys have it, but the ESPN app, I'm obviously signed up for all the Philadelphia teams, but then the first report comes out. So it just shoots right to my phone. And I remember I was doing like something during the day, and it says something like, Ben Simmons lands awkwardly on foot, says it feels fine, should be just I believe it said it was a sprain. And so then you read, you're like, okay, it's Ben Simmons, big name, Sixers, like he's supposed to be another part of the process. And so it's like, no wonder they wrote this article about him. And I believe it's like an hour later, and they're like, speculation of Ben Simmons having broken his foot. And it's just one of those things you want to smack your forehead and be like, again? Are we really going through this again? How many years do we have to like suffer? Like, it doesn't make any sense. It was as a city of Philadelphia, you should be able to not only just have great teams all the time, like Boston and New York and all these things. It's like, it's an attractive place for players to come. What's going on? Why has this been happening? And it was hard to want to listen to that news, especially after seeing some of the things he did in the preseason.
So yeah. You gotta imagine that at some point your luck will finally, or your fate will kind of go in your favor, and you'll get lucky.
Well, I think we might be right in the midst of that right now.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's still very much reliant on what we get out of Simmons here in these, and you know, maybe after the All-Star break, going into the end of the year, what can he give you for the last 2 months of the season to at least give you that idea that, wow, this Simmons Embiid combo, this pick and roll that they're doing, is going to really work in the future. And I think they're trying to do it now with Covington, and obviously that's not as good.
Covington's pretty good. So, on,
I mean,
like, Covington's fine.
Yeah,
for the
sure.
Sixers, he's fine.
Sure.
He's fine for the Sixers.
So Tom, I want to ask, looking back at it now with what we know at the present, would you have traded these last 4 years of what you had to suffer through in return for Embiid, the idea of Ben Simmons, not knowing what he's going to be, and then maybe probably a really good point guard in this upcoming draft?
Absolutely, 100%. 100%. I think there's, like, I've kind of gone over it a few times. I think there's a sense of being heartbroken with how Philadelphia used to be and how it's not even just the pro level for the city. It's the, you think of the big five in Philadelphia for basketball, which, I mean, you have Nova is number one. You have things like, you have LaSalle, you have Temple, you have St. Joe's, you have Drexel, all these things. And then high school basketball is huge. You have some of the best players coming out of the area, like Gerald Henderson right now in the Sixers, played at Episcopal Academy, which is in one of my least teams in my high school league. My older brother played against him. Guy's a freak. And now he's there.
And you have a guy like Kyle Lowry who just kind of reps Philadelphia everywhere he goes because he's from the area and he talks about quote-unquote Philly basketball all the time.
Yeah, and it was Philly basketball is very near and dear to our hearts, especially I would put up there right with the Eagles. I think it goes Eagles and it would be the Sixers. And this is where people, I can see why their fan base is like, oh, they're just fair weather fans. But it's hard to understand what happened over the past 10 years after you have the guy who everybody loved and trusted requests his way out, comes to a screeching halt, any progress we made. I mean, we're going downhill at that point. But just to see these constant, like, under 500 years, under 500, then it's getting blown out. It's not even fun to watch. It was almost, when the Sixers won, it was like a celebration, like we just won the championship. And, like, that's embarrassing. That's an embarrassment. And I hate the fact that there's some fans that were, like, cheering for that. But now, looking back on it, having calmed down, having gone through all those seasons, I think definitely it was worth it. I mean, especially with what you think is with the Sixers, with this new lottery coming up, I think the lottery's going to be huge. And Dante, to answer your question, I think that last month or two for Simmons, I actually don't think it's going to be as much for the fan base. I think it's going to be really not like, what can the Sixers do for us? It's going to be like more, what can the Sixers, like, feel out and get Simmons some real time against some of these stars? Because I think that they're going to try these different schemes. I think they're going to move, they're going to set up a lot of different opportunities for him to get open shots. I think he's going to be someone to be taken to isolation. And because when you have Embiid on the backside getting rebounds and Nerlens, they're animal, or at least that's called Embiid right now, or Jaleel, whatever you want to say. That's exciting to me. And I think Simmons, from what I heard, is going to be a great point guard, from what they're saying.
So I guess go ahead, Austin.
Well, yeah, I was just kind of, as we look towards the future a little bit, this may have been what you were trying to get to, but I think we just look into this offseason, probably not a little bit further because that's just too hard to speculate. But I think we start to look at who they might target in the draft, who they might target in free agency, and like what kind of names we should be looking at, because the offseason is really only about 5 months away or so. So I think, especially for Sixers fans who probably won't be in the playoffs, you start looking at what the future holds now that you know you have Embiid, a potential super, if everything goes right health-wise, a superstar.
Definitely. So the future for this upcoming offseason, off the top of my head, someone that from just watching so far this season is perfect in the draft, and I think he'll fall. Say the Sixers land around 5 or 6, I think he'll fall right there, or I'm crossing my fingers that he does, is Malik Monk. I think he is a fantastic guard. And I think that's something that the Sixers will highly, highly consider. You need to obviously go after a guard, that which is also another, I think you're going to go after Jrue Holiday in the offseason heavy. I believe they're really going to try to get him to come back and be like, it's a different team. And this is where I think the unsung here, the Philadelphia 76ers, will come into play to getting these guys back, like a Jrue Holiday back. And that's Brett Brown, who was hired by Sam Hinkie, who has stayed cool, calm, and collected. And I believe what Phil Jackson the other day just said he loves to see the Sixers win because he knows how hard like Brett Brown coaches and like all these things. And I feel for Brett Brown. I think that he's going to be a guy who's going to pull in a Jrue Holiday. And then I'm hoping to get a Malik Monk in the draft. And then I think you're going to see one of those either Nerlens or Okafor go in a trade. I'm not sure what those would be parts of that trade, but I doubt it's gonna be a one player for something unless we got some ridiculous draft pick for it. But that's really where I see this upcoming offseason happening. I think if you have to sit Malik Monk, you still have a solid starting five. And I think they may even pursue a little bit of a contract extension with Ilyasova, which people don't always think, but that's just my opinion on it.
Well, I think it's good to have some veterans. I think that's an important. I think, obviously, Jrue Holiday possibly coming back, and I think that lends itself to an entire other story. Maybe if we find some kid from New Orleans who can tell you how terrible it is to be one of their fans. But yeah. I do think that guard is the way to go. But it's got to be a pure two, I guess, right? And Monk does fit that bill. But you can't really have a ball hungry point guard, right? Because Simmons is supposed to be this new proto point guard.
That's what you worry about. Yeah.
Also in that kind of same vein, I think Saric isn't a bad playmaker also. I think he can also make some plays for you. Not in the same level of like bringing the ball up and initiating your offense, but I think you get him some post touches and he can create his own shot or find other guys.
And that's where just a ha situation, I think you put literally you have Simmons as point, you have the pure guard with Monk. You have either Nerlens or Okafor and Embiid down there. And then at three, like, if it was ever possible, I know it's not going to happen again. You wish this is when you wish the Sixers still had Kyle Korver. It's like, because you know Simmons will be able to beat somebody off a dribble. And Kyle Korver sitting wide open, I think there's not many more people more dangerous than him from three.
Well, the good thing is that the NBA is in no shortage of shooters at this point. So
that's true. It's very true. And I think... I don't know if Dario could turn into that shooter. Again, we don't know.
I think he'd be respectable.
I think he would too, but it's really, I think it's everything's kind of depending on how they're teaching Ben Simmons. I mean, Ben Simmons, when did Ben Simmons ever play point in his life other than the times when he was probably on AAU and he was just the best player? You know, he was bringing it up and just going the whole, like, full length of the court. And I think it's, are they teaching him to dish? Are they teaching him to drive and score? What are they doing here? It's like, you're never going to have I don't think you're going to have an Eric Snow who was so selfless and gave the ball to Allen Iverson all the time.
Eric Snow.
Dude, people can make fun of him. He was the point guard that was so consistent through that those years of getting real close. Like, I mean, he came up so clutch when we played Toronto right before the, and beat out Toronto.
He was on that LeBron, right that first LeBron championship team too, by the way.
Was he?
Yeah.
Was Snow there?
Mm-hmm.
Eric Snow, man. He's
a timeless classic.
Yeah. It's the same. It's just, Eric Snow and Aaron McKee fall into a category all into themselves. I mean, you have Aaron McKee now who lives the next town over. Just a suburban town. Nothing ever happens. All good stuff. And then Aaron McKee gets pulled over and found with an illegal Glock or something. Some sort of pistol. And it's like, at that point, Aaron McKee was coaching at Temple, I believe. He was an assistant or something. No, he's the Sixers assistant, actually. And it's like, why it's the town's called Blue Belt. It's like, why do you even have a gun in Blue Belt? When was the last time there was a serious crime here? And it's hysterical to think that guy was sixth man of the year at one point.
Sixth man of the year to 6 months behind bars.
But yeah. And so just like to quickly, I guess, wrap it up, I think it's we're really going to see, I think you're going to see different trends for a few games at a time. I think like these little longer stints, maybe 5 to 7 games of maybe Simmons, he's driving more, he's taking it himself, and there's when he's dishing out and looking for Embiid down low. And I think it's really more of a meshing last few months of the season, and I think they're going to hit the offseason hard. And I'm not going to say next year because, again, it's still pretty young, but you get a few veterans in there, and I think it's a whole new organization.
Are you trying to say playoffs? Is this what are you getting at?
I don't know. I don't know if I'm getting at playoffs next year. If they did, it would be like a classic 8 seed go play and just get run out. But I don't think so.
I tried convincing Austin last week that the 76ers were going to make the playoffs this year. So I'm hopeful.
Definitely not this year.
I think it'd be fun.
Great.
Yeah.
It would. it'd be so fun. But at the same time, now after all the suffering we've gone through, it's like you're going to make the playoffs, and now we're giving up Malik Monk or whatever yeah, guard we want to get.
That's a great point. I think you would take a quality guard, which is with this draft is stock full of, over those $2-3 million gate receipts that you'll get.
Exactly.
And as we do start to wrap up all the Sixers talk going forward, I think the key is just going to be finding those quality wing guys that fit very well next to Embiid and Simmons and Saric. I don't know how many of them are currently on the team or like whether TJ McConnell can be a competent backup point guard, or I don't even know who else. Covington can come off the bench and play a good role for
Gerald Henderson.
A role. Yeah, yeah.
Henderson's getting older, and McConnell, I think, actually is a fundamentally sound. He could be a backup. Give you a few minutes here and there. I mean, I think Simmons is a freak all himself when it comes to athletics. I think that he could play majority of the minutes or most of the minutes, and McConnell will take those extra few. You know what I mean?
But yeah, and the other two guys that I think bear mentioning are the other two first-round draft picks from this year, Timothy Luwawu-Cabarré and then Furkan Korkmaz. We haven't seen Furkan in the NBA yet. Timothy's played a little. I haven't seen any minutes.
He can shoot.
He went up and down. I believe it is twice now, both ways. And I believe they want to move him. But he was up in the developmental. He's in the developmental league now, I think. I don't think he's on the bench still.
Yeah.
And he's down there. And Dante, you're right. He can shoot. But he's just not catching. The reports are he's not catching up to the speed of the game.
So, he's also 21 years old, so I think you got to give him some time.
I mean, and you're right. He's not a 19, 20-year-old Jaleel or whatever. He's not one of those guys. So maybe keep him down there and see what happens. And maybe out of the grace of God, we somehow have a developmental league player come out and he's our pure shooter. That would be payback enough. But I think this year you kind of keep it to fun. I think you're looking for those lottery picks. You have Embiid, who is a fan favorite. There's enthusiasm back in the air in Philadelphia, and I think that with Embiid kind of keeping everybody entertained and playing so well himself, mm-hmm. I don't see the problem as to why we don't wait another year and just really start to get into it next year.
Yeah, so. I agree. Well, I think that's enough Sixers talk for everyone's ears.
Definitely.
I really, really enjoyed this. Tom, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
Of course, thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, Dante, good job as always.
Thank you, Austin. I appreciate it.
I know you need my validation, but we'll be back sometime in the next week or so. I don't know if it'll just be me and Dante or maybe we'll have another guest, but this was a ton of fun. You should follow us on Twitter at Coast to Coast Pod. Both Dante and I's Twitter handles are in there. Tom, do you want to plug yours?
I will just retweet. I'm actually honestly not sure. I just changed my Twitter. Let me get to it right now. Ready? As we wrap this up, here we are. My Twitter is Hoags27. Hoag spelled at HOAGS27.
All right. Well, we will look forward to seeing your future Sixers tweets. And thanks everyone for listening.